Welcome back to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt, and we're brought to you by the California 1020, 10 miles, 20 bands, coming up on Sunday, February 15th, 2015, Del Mar Fairgrounds to Encinitas and back. That's cal1020.com. Core Sports, the very best in women's athletic wear. That's coresports.com. And, of course, you can check out any of our interviews on iTunes, on Babbittville Radio. My next guest just had a great race in Boston, finishing fifth on Sunday. Desiree Linden joins us. Desi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Well, first of all, congratulations. Getting, 10th in Boston and fifth in New York in the same year is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's been going well. Another step forward in New York, but I competed well. So it's a good year and move forward from here.
So take me, you grew up here, right? Chula Vista gal.
Yes, I did.
So Chula Vista, Hilltop High, was cross country and track. Was that always your sport?
I was a big soccer player. I started when I was about six, probably.
Yeah.
And I was the kid who was like, well, I got to stay in shape for soccer, so I'm going to try cross country. And then I was significantly better at running long distance than getting thrown around on the soccer field. So eventually switched over.
And when did you switch over? Was that like what, junior, senior year of high school?
Yes, probably in my senior year. I halfway through the season, I was like, I can't get beat up or hurt right now. So I just kind of cut off my season right in the middle and decided that it was the best to just focus on track and going to Arizona State after high school. I didn't really want to jeopardize that.
So. Right. And at Arizona State, you stayed pretty healthy throughout your career there.
I did. I had little niggles every now and then, but nothing major. I had a tough time with plantar my senior year, but it was nothing I couldn't train through. So I got slowly but surely better each year. It just was never enough to get me competitive with that front group. And, the Amy Hastings and the Victoria Jacksons, obviously Shalane was there and Kim Smith at that time. They were a whole different world, so...
So out of college, did you feel like, okay, I'm going to move on and be a professional runner? Or did you feel that college was going to be the end of the running and then you'd move into a career path of some sort?
I think by my junior and senior year, I was kind of kicking around the idea that I had more in the tank. I had some days where I would, I could do workouts with the big girls and keep up and showed promise, but I could just never quite nail it on race day. So I felt like I just wanted to give myself a little more time. And, junior and senior year kind of crept up on me quick. And so I thought, well, let's keep at this for a little longer.
And when you said the hard part is when you're in college, you get some support, right? You're on scholarship, you get some support while you're there. Once you're out of college, you're on your own. That's where a lot of people end up disappearing from the running scene. How hard was that for you out of college, staying involved without that sort of support cocoon of college?
Yeah, 100% agree. And actually, I got really lucky because I got hooked up with Hanson's Brooks Distance Project right away. My college coach, Walt Drentz, I was tight with the Michigan scene, and he pointed me in the direction of Kevin and Keith. And if there's a transition that feels a lot like college, it's the team out here. You meet together every day, and you have that medical support, and instead of school, it's a job. So it wasn't a bad gig.
So Hanson Brooks has been obviously a great program. For a gal from Chula Vista, how tough was it to go from, our weather out here is pretty sweet, Arizona's not too bad, to go to freaking Michigan where it's pretty cold?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I had to sell myself. I think Kevin and Keith were like, no way, you're going to want to go home after the first weekend that we get, 40 or drop below that. And I kind of talked myself into it. I was like, I run in Arizona, it's 100 and something. It's just a different type of uncomfortable. But I always joke, I can, run in Arizona State, I can run in Michigan. Whatever the weather is on race day, I've experienced it and I'm ready for it.
Well, yeah, it probably is really how you think about it. If most of the events, New York, Boston, you never know what type of weather you're going to get at any of those places. So 2007, Boston was your first marathon?
It was, yes.
And 19th, 244, you have to be, at that point, you got to be thinking, wow, this is pretty good.
Yeah, I was pleased with that day. It was like the goal was to qualify for the trials, and we had, I think that was the year of the Nor'easter where they were on the bubble of canceling it, and so I was really proud that I went out and raced and still accomplished my goals on kind of a crummy day, and I fell in love with the marathon. It was like, I thought the crowds were amazing. I loved the experience, and everyone was like, there wasn't really anyone out there. It was too cold, and I was like, are you kidding me? It was the best thing ever. So I fell in love with the marathon that day.
And did you finish that feeling like, okay, I've been a runner, but now I know my distance. The marathon is it for me.
Yeah. I mean, even in the training, it was like I liked the grind where it was like we're going to load up a bunch of miles, these long workouts that aren't necessarily super fast. You're just going to have to tolerate being uncomfortable and fatigued in a weird new way.
Yeah.
I liked the whole thing about it. And, you know, you're taking fluids on the run and your decision making for a really long time. The whole thing was good. I loved it.
You sort of like the mobile chess game atmosphere to it, because it's not just the fastest person who wins. It's the smartest person who wins.
Absolutely.
So Houston, you know, when you run 1:12 for a half, that shows you've got the leg speed. Olympic trials, 13th, 2:37:50. Did you come away from there? Did you have, obviously you want to make the team, but knowing that you'd only been in the marathon for a year at that point, were you happy with how all that turned out?
It was one of the toughest races where I put myself in it, and probably at mile 21, I was like, I'm going to make the Olympic team. This is my second marathon. This is it. It's going great. And then at mile 22, I was losing about 40 seconds a mile, and I was like, this is the worst thing ever.
Where's the pickup truck?
Yeah, exactly. Don't pick me up. Just run over me.
That's funny. Yeah,
but it was a turning point, because it was the same thing where it's like, okay, there's all these different elements, and you can't just expect to run well because the training went well. You have to go and really do everything right. And I learned so much from that race, and it made me really motivated for the next 4 years. So.
So when I look at just your progression from, you know, 2:37 to 2:31 to 2:27 to 2:26, that steady progression, what in terms of the coaching, because a lot of that to me seems it's obviously coaching preparation. But talk a little bit about what the program there brings to the table to keep you motivated and keep you going, okay, you can go faster. It seems like the program needs to adapt to the fact that you're getting faster and faster.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, I had a lot of, you know, teammates around me that were accomplishing big things as well. And when you train with them every day, you see them succeed and you go, oh, I can do that. Like, I can run with them.
Right.
So you kind of build on their successes. And you see, like, a Brian Sell, who kind of has a similar story to me, run amazing and finish top five in Boston and Chicago and make his first Olympic team. And, you know, I know Brian was incredible and worked really hard, but you saw that and you go, well, I can work really hard too. I'm doing all the same things. And he had a lot of confidence from that. And I just really enjoy it, so I keep wanting to chip away at it.
Sure. So 2009, first U.S. woman at IAAF World Champs, and then first American at Chicago in 2010. To me, I look at 2011, where it just seemed like you were on fire with, I think you set PRs at 5,000, 10,000, half marathon and marathon, correct?
Correct, yeah. Good year.
good year. So what was it about that year? What was it about your preparation leading into that year that put you in that position?
A lot of steady, consistent work. And, you know, you start putting respectable season after, you know, stringing them together, and you gain a lot of confidence. And I think I went into Boston 2011 and, you know, got the home run pretty much, well, as close as you can get.
Yeah.
And you get a lot of confidence from that, and all the strength work certainly made me faster. I think that's when I'm going to be my fastest. So when we dialed back and went back to the track, I was on fire there too. So it was a combination of confidence and a string of a lot of work after year after year.
Is it, you know, it's interesting is once you've run, you know, you run a fast marathon and you start thinking of yourself as a marathoner, Sometimes people forget that you still have to do the 5,000 and 10,000, that all that transfers over. Is it hard to still do the fast stuff when you're going, okay, I'm a marathoner, I don't need to go get on the track and run, you know, run repeats, because my race is 26 miles.
Right. It is hard. It's hard to change gears, but one of the things that is actually pretty nice about it is we scale our mileage way back when you're training for the shorter stuff.
So yeah.
It's kind of a nice incentive where you're like, well, I'm just going to do 90 miles a week if I do the 5K. so it is good to change paces a little bit and kind of freshen up and stuff too.
So wait, you just used the term "just" with 90 miles a week. Wait a second. So what?
I know.
Yeah, that's sort of an. I don't think you're allowed to use the word "just" with with 90 miles a week. When you're training longer, what type of miles are you running per week?
In the marathon buildup, I'll get up to 120.
Oh God.
Just under 125. Yeah, we start doing our taper, and everyone's like, "Oh, I can't wait to cut back and have so much extra time." Our taper, I think I did 96 miles on the week of the marathon recently. So
that was taper time. That was taper time.
Yeah.
And you feel it. You feel a little more springy when you drop to 95 a week.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you cut me back much more, I would just feel flat.
You
would just feel uncomfortable and unusual because I'm not used to going that low.
Now, is there a point of diminishing return where when you've run, 10, 15, 20 marathons where it's just tough to, because you know how tough it's going to be between miles 18 and 26. Are you looking at your career going, okay, I can run the marathon for X number of years? Or is it the type of thing where you still love it and you feel like your body recuperates?
I guess I go back and forth on that sometimes. When it's going well, you love it. When you're off and you're just struggling every day, I think coming back from injury, it was like, man, I really beat my body up, and I don't know how long I can do this. But I think you go through those moments of doubt anytime you're struggling or having a bad one. So right now I feel really good and taking it, race by race, but also mixing in that shorter stuff and different distances and trying to get better at your weaknesses and play back and forth with speed and strength. That helps out a lot.
Now, do you do a lot of other things besides run? Are you in the gym doing core work as well?
I should be doing more. I do love a good yoga session. That's always fun. But, yeah, I could be doing more, I think.
So you look at 2011 was such an awesome year, and then you come in second Olympic marathon trials, 2:25 in Houston. But you had a stress fracture going into the games?
I did, yes.
How tough was that? What's so tough is the Olympics is once every 4 years, and that's the day where you want to have everything firing. And you knew beforehand that you're just not, you just don't have it that day.
Mm-hmm. I think probably the toughest thing about it was that we didn't actually know it was a stress fracture prior to the Olympics. So, as an athlete, you do everything you can. You go in, you get a massage,
sure,
you get a PT, all of that, and you just, I felt like I wasn't doing enough to make myself better because I didn't think it was bone related. I thought it was something fixable.
Yeah.
So it was like each day, like Groundhog Day of frustration, where you're like, I did everything I could today and I'm just going backwards still. So it was frustrating, but I think once I got that correct diagnosis where I was like, no, this is bone related, you did everything you could, it's just not something you could fix like overnight with a session. That made me feel a little bit better in a tiny way. And then it was just a matter of taking time and recovering.
Did you get to enjoy the Olympics at all? Just the opening ceremonies, closing ceremonies, or when you have an injury like that, is it just, I don't even want to be here?
I made myself enjoy it because it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
Yep.
There's no guarantees. I worked really hard. I got myself on that team, and I did do everything I could to get myself to the starting line and try to compete. So when I was at the opening ceremonies, it was like, you have to stop, look around, take it in, smile. It's a lifelong dream come true. And just because you don't get your day on the day doesn't mean you can't appreciate it. So I really made myself enjoy it.
Well, nice thing, too, is you're still young and you've got 2016 not too far away.
it's definitely something that's kept me motivated. So certainly looking at that with a lot of fire and ready to go.
So when you have something like that, when you have a stress fracture, does it make it tough that following year when you're going into 2013? Are you maybe hypersensitive to any type of pain and going, I hope this thing is gone? When did you feel that you were yourself again and you could put it out of your mind?
Yeah, it has been a long process with that. And I think between Kevin Keith and John Ball, the chiropractor, he really helped me out getting back. I think we had a really good plan in place and it was very conservative. I think we looked at the 2016 date and said, we're not in a rush right now, so just take it as slow as you need to go. And I think that's been pretty key in getting me back where I am now, which I'd say the build-up to New York is probably the first time where I felt like I had my stride back and felt pretty normal. And again, I don't know if that's just like the back of my mind, am I okay? Am I pushing too hard? Is that going to pop back up again? Maybe I was actually fine, but we took a really conservative approach, and I think it was smart.
So you finished fifth in New York, and you were right there. And as I was watching the race, I'm going, look at Desi. She's tucked right behind there. You did a really, really good job trying to stay out of the wind, it looked like. And were you happy with the race? Because through 18 miles or so, you were right there.
Yeah, I was really pleased with it. I mean, the conditions were obviously very tough, and it's a different race than I've ever run before. Usually I kind of just have my own race plan. I can settle in and do whatever I need to do. The conditions made you go with the pack. Whatever the leaders did, you just had to stick in and stay with it. Because once you got separated, the same effort felt like twice as hard.
Right.
So I was happy with how I raced and how I managed that. And even after I got dropped, I feel like I never gave up. And I got those two spots with, probably under a mile to go. So I thought I competed well the whole day.
So you moved in the fifth during the last couple miles.
Yeah. Yep. I think I caught two women on the south side of the park, and then the one woman on the south side of the park, and then I caught the woman who finished sixth, literally at the line. I outkicked someone.
How fun is that?
It was fun.
That's where
fun afterwards. While I was doing it, I was like, this hurts so bad.
And that's a little uphill coming into the finish line, isn't it?
It is.
Oh, that looks awful. Even on television, you're looking at it going, why would they have a little uphill right at the end of this? Just a little more torture for everybody. But now you're running New York and running Boston. When you run those big American city marathons, it's got to be special being an American athlete running through the streets of Boston and the streets of New York.
It is. It's so much fun. The people are really supportive. They know the American athletes in the field. And if you're up in the hunt, they are cheering loud. And we had such a great crop on both the men's and the women's side, but the women's side with Lauren Kleppen, Annie Bersagel, Dina Castor, and obviously Kara. It was just a really exciting thing to be a part of.
You know, it's interesting. I've seen this in endurance sports with running and triathlon and cycling. It seems there's a camaraderie between the top athletes just because you're really competing against yourself on race day. Obviously, you want to be up further than the other person to get the notoriety and the prize money, et cetera. But there's still a respect for the other women who are doing, you know, what they've gone through to get to that point. And there seems to be a mutual respect for the American women that you guys sort of celebrate everybody's success.
Yeah, I say that's 100% true. I mean, everyone knows what the grind is like, and we've all had our setbacks. And there's not a person that, if they beat you and they had their race of their life, you wouldn't be happy for. I think respect is probably the perfect word for it. We definitely respect one another.
So heading towards 2016, do you have an idea what your year is going to look like in 2015?
Not just yet. I know I'm going to have to get on the track here and try to work on that speed, bring the mileage down, which isn't bad.
Yeah.
Haven't done that in a while. And I think after that big injury, it was just getting fit and getting that strength back. And now I need to dial it back and start getting quicker. So that'll definitely be on the schedule for a big chunk of next year.
So talk a little bit about 360 Elite Endurance, that program that you're creating with your sister Natalie.
Yeah, just it's kind of come up in the last year or so. We've been kicking around ideas. Her boss, Frank Martinez, owns a 360 sports company, is the, I guess, the overarching company. And he's really into baseball, and he has a motorworks division, but he wants to try and get into endurance sports. So with my background, he thought the marathon world would be good, or yeah, even just fitness in general. And Natalie is obviously interested in running and fitness, and so we kind of have a broad, group of people we can help out. She's, you know, a full-time worker and trying to stay fit, and I have the elite side. So I think we're going to try and dial in training plans that would really work for anyone across the board. And, it's early stages right now, but that's kind of the direction we're looking.
So if somebody had told you when you were leaving Arizona State, hey, in a few years, you're going to be one of America's premier marathoners, what would you have said to them?
I said, there's no way I'm covering 26.2. I don't even want to do the marathon.
I love that. Hey, Desiree, thank you so much for taking time. Congratulations on a great year, 5th and 10th at Boston and New York, and being first American at New York. That's pretty impressive.
Thanks so much.
All right. Desiree Linden has been our guest. Again, we are brought to you by California 1020. 10 miles, 20 bands, February 15, 2015, from Del Mar Fairgrounds, Encinitas, and back. Cal1020.com. Core Sports, the very best in women's athletic wear. And you can check out any of our interviews on Babbittville Radio on iTunes. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.